Hello, good afternoon. My name is Locke, and I'll be presenting DroidScope. So DroidScope is an analysis platform, which is kind of different from the previous talks, which is more about prevention. So what we really focused on in DroidScope is a new way or a new platform for actually doing analysis, understanding what malware does. This is joint work with Professor Heng Yin from Syracuse University. And so what I would do is I'll first go through a little background in terms of other analysis techniques, and then we'll go into DroidScope. And to start the background, let's just start with a little sample application here. This is little DroidScope. As expected, the applications in Android, you would have Java components because Java is a core part of the Android platform. And aside from Java components, every once in a while, you have native components. So instead of Java code, you have native code. It can either be ARM, x86, whatever it might be. And at the same time, this application might want to use system services, get your contact information, make calls, get some location information, whatever else it might be. And it might also want to talk to other apps because other apps are broadcasting messages. And so if we take all of these different components and we just move it aside and compare it to a kind of a programmer perspective of what the Android system looks like, you have the Linux kernel on the bottom. And then you have your each processes, which is one of these little columns there. And you have your native sides, you have your Java sides of it. So, you know, the Java component goes into the Dalvik virtual machine. That's where it gets executed. Your other components will go into their respective places. And so let's just focus on this abstract view of what the Android system is. Given this abstract view, now we can talk about how do we do analysis on it. So a very common way for us to do analysis is to start with static analysis. In other words, you can go and you can take your APK, rip out all of the DEX code out, and you can do static analysis on that. You can even use very common tools for doing static analysis on the native components. Okay. So static analysis, the great thing here is that you get a very good coverage over all portions of this abstract Android device. Now, the possible negatives of static analysis a lot of times is the fact that what happens is there are too many states for you to cover. So sometimes what we do is you do use static analysis, but we also amend it and use dynamic analysis. Now, here is a one way of doing dynamic analysis, and we say this is internal. So in other words, the dynamic analysis tool is built into the device or the system that you actually want to analyze. In this case, on a very popular ones so like TaintDroid, DroidRanger, even Android comes with Logcat, ADB, right? So these are facilities that are built into the Android device for you to do analysis at runtime dynamically. Another way that we can do this is we can do this externally. Now, one of the reasons why we might want to do it externally, as the first speaker, Hassan, was talking about, there might be cases where a piece of malware would get in and can see and circumvent some of these analysis tools that you have. And so we have this external. External analysis, there are plenty of research projects that have already looked at it, except this was on a desktop environment. And because they were focusing on it in a desktop environment, what they were really focused on is rebuilding this semantic view of the native side. In other words, what process is running? What are the instructions that are executing? So you cannot directly use the same kind of tools for Android. And the only reason here is because we have this Dalvik virtual machine, this extra virtualization layer in between. So what we propose, therefore, is DroidScope, which is a way for us to kind of combine these ideas into one single platform where you can have external analysis, right, like the previous tools, but not only do you have semantic information about what's going on at the Linux layer, okay, but also at the Dalvik layer, and be able to kind of seamlessly combine them to see how the Dalvik and the native sides interact. And so here's a quick overview. Basically, DroidScope is this thing on the outside, and then you can have an API to use to kind of instrument and look at how things are done. And so we'll get into the details of DroidScope now. Overall, the goals are very simple. We want to leverage the Android SDK, the emulator that's part of it, right? Because we have pretty much guarantees that the Android virtual devices will work with it. We do not want to make any changes to the Android virtual devices. Okay, so this is actually one of the goals that we have. And so given that, then we have three other things here, which is external instrumentation. Because we're doing things externally, we need to rebuild the semantic views. We need to be able to support plugins because the plugins are the pieces that actually do most of the work. We're only giving them basic functionality. And of course, one of the other things that is important is performance. In other words, how do we kind of wring out the best kind of performance that we can have for this emulation-based analysis platform? So for the rest of the talk, what I'll do is I'll talk about the instrumentation, which is rebuilding the context. Then we'll talk about the interface with a little example. And then we'll talk about evaluation. And then we'll round up and finish. So at first, let's just talk about the Linux context. Linux introspection is actually well understood, right? A lot of papers have actually, and a lot of people know how to do this. I would like to point out that aside from all of the crazy range of the information that you get on a normal task list, one thing that we found in Android that is useful is argv0. So in other words, this is the command line, okay? Now, interestingly enough, Zygote takes the application, the full name, and puts it into argv0, which is in user space. And based on this, this is how we can actually recognize the full name, because the COM field in Linux only supports 15 characters. So here's a quick screenshot. On the bottom, you have com.android.calculator2. So if you do not take that full name from argv0, you'll be left with com.android.cal or cal or something like that. And so it might be possible for you to mistake in one process from another. And of course, you can see there's the thread information, some of the other standard process information that you would expect. In addition to the shadow task list, we also provide a rebuild in terms of semantic view on a shadow memory map. And this turns out to be very important, because once you insert ASLR, which is built into the modern Android platforms, we now need to know at runtime, every single run, where different pieces of the virtual machine is. And we'll see how this works when you connect it with a symbol database that we also provide. So of course, we want to keep track and make sure that these two shadow lists are up to date. And we basically watch for invocations of these specific system calls. When they return, we go and we update the corresponding list. Okay. So at runtime, if you are writing an analysis tool, a plugin, you can consult these different shadow lists for a little bit more information, okay, every up-to-date information. Now, on the Java and Dalvik side, this is a little bit newer. And so this is kind of easy to understand if you understand the Dalvik virtual machine. Now, the most important part that I want to point out here is the glue data structure. So basically, in the Dalvik virtual machine, the glue data structure maintains all of the information that you ever want to know about what is going on in Dalvik, okay? Except if you're in the native side, then you have to look at the JNI environment data structure. But if you want to know what this pointer is, which current method is being invoked, the thread information, it's all there. So if you can find where that is, and it's actually pretty easy at runtime, it's either pointed to by a specific register in ARM or an x86 is on the stack. There's a pointer to it. So then you can know exactly what the current state of the Java virtual machine is. Now, aside from the state of the Java virtual machine, we also want to know, let's say, whenever a Dalvik instruction is being executed. Okay, so to do that, we need to understand how that happens. And how that happens is they use a mturp interpreter. Okay, and the mturp interpreter uses a very fast, very simple way of doing interpreting, which is a offset addressing. You take the opcode, you shift it over by 6, and you add it to a symbol, DEVM ASM instruction start, and then you jump to it. So given the symbol information, if we have the shadow or memory map, like we talked about before, then we can identify exactly what that specific address is. And so once we know what that address is, you can now just do a reverse lookup in terms of a calculation, and to know that if you are currently executing a certain instruction at a certain memory range, you know exactly what the Dalvik bytecode is. Okay. So this works out very well. But of course, there's always something additional that they add into it that kind of throws a little wrench into our little plans, which is the just-in-time compiler. The just-in-time compiler was introduced to improve performance, and to specifically improve performance for hot code traces. In other words, multiple basic blocks, okay, potentially, of code that is very hot, and others being used a lot. So what they would do is they would compile that down into native code, and then you basically execute the native code instead. Now, this introduces problems for us in terms of analysis, because you no longer understand what the per Dalvik instruction boundaries are anymore. So this complicates things. All right? But of course, at the same time, you want to be able to support it, because it gives you good performance boost. So what we decided to do is, instead of completely disabling JIT at build time, because we could do that, we decided to dynamically disable JIT by instrumenting the way that the DVM actually works. And to do this, we just look at how the a notional picture of how the JIT compiler and actually everything works together. Basically, given a program counter, you would look and see whether or not that specific trace starting at that address is already been JITted. In other words, is it in the code cache? If it has already been JITted, then you just execute a JIT bok and everything's pretty good. On the other hand, if it's not, then what you do is you decrement a counter, and if the counter is zero, which in this case, if it's not, then you use the mturm interpreter. If it is, then you say that it's hot, and so you want to compile that. You just submit a request, and once again, you default back to the mturm interpreter. So given this kind of view, we see that as long as we can always force the path down the no branch, which is in terms of this, you know, is the JITted code in the cache, then we should always force that particular block at that address to go into the mturm interpreter, and so we can continue our instrumentation. And as it turns out, through the code, there's actually one function which is used, DVM get code address. Okay, it returns no, if it is not JITted, it returns the address of the translated block if it is. So what we do is we make sure that whenever this function is called, when it returns, we overwrite the return value with a no value, so then it always uses the mturm interpreter. Okay. So now we know, get an idea of how the views are actually reconstructed. Let's just talk about how do you actually use this reconstructed view in terms of the API. The API itself is an event-based API. Okay, so in other words, what you can do is you can register for callbacks for per native instruction or per Dalvik instruction, or maybe when a new process is actually started. Now, aside from registering for the events, you can also submit a condition. In other words, I want to know when a specific process is started, or I want to know when a specific system call is actually being made. So in addition to this event-based interface, we also have this query and set. In other words, there's ways for us to give you the ability to change the way that the analysis is going to run and to actually instrument the virtual machine as it's running. Another part of the design, once again, is we want to think about performance. Now, in terms of performance, if you think about it, if you are interested in a callback for every single native instruction, that is going to be a lot more performance heavy in terms of the overhead than every Dalvik instruction. Okay? But at the same time, you don't always want native instructions. Maybe sometimes if you do an analysis, you want to start at the Dalvik side, and then when you see something very interesting, like it's entering JNI code, right? Yet there's a JNI call, now you want to start and enable this native instruction callback. And so what we really want to do is you want to make this instrumentation very dynamic. Okay, so in other words, depending on what callbacks are actually in the system right now, the QMU, as the Droidscope, would actually adjust how QMU executes in order to improve the performance at that specific time. So here's just a quick example. On the left is a very similar kind of view on how this translated cache works, right? And basically on the right, this is the kind of notional idea of what we do as a flow. So if you register for a new callback or you unregister an old callback, what we do is we first, as part of Droidscope, determine whether or not this callback needs a flush. A flush as in, does the QMU cache need to be flushed? And if you do need to flush, there's actually multiple types. Do you need to flush the whole cache, or do you only flush a single basic block, right? If you actually are registering or unregistering a specific system call, for example, then you only need to flush the, you don't need to flush anything. For a basic block, then you only need to flush the code for that specific basic block. So this kind of helps that performance. The JITted side, in terms of the JITted code, we have a way of forcing the whole thing to flush, but we currently do not have a way of flushing specific JITted blocks inside the Dalvik virtual machine. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. Okay. So in terms of instrumentation, here's just a quick view of all the things that you can do as part of the API. The important thing to notice here is that the API is layered in terms of three layers of abstraction, which is very similar to the three layers of abstraction for your Android device itself. There's the native side, the Linux side, and then the Dalvik side. So to see how this all comes together, let's just look at how do you build a simple Dalvik instruction tracer using Droidscope. First, we need to have an initialization function. And in this case, it says, please tell me whenever Droid Kung Fu starts running, and when it does, call this specific callback function. When that callback function happens, we make some checks, and then we disable JIT. Okay, so you just request that JIT is being disabled for a range. In this case, it's the whole memory range. Aside from disabling JIT, we also want to say, I want to know the opcodes, all the opcodes. And whenever the opcodes are being executed for the Dalvik, then I want you to call this particular callback. And the callback up here, all it does is it takes the currently executing Dalvik opcode, prints it onto the screen, and everybody's happy. Now, in terms of that optimized and very selective JIT disabling that we're talking about, if you actually want to, let's say, disable JIT for only the Droid Kung Fu classes.dex memory region, all you need to do is make a simple call, like get mod address. And what this would do is it would go into the shallow memory list, find that particular entry, and then populate the start and end addresses with the popular, the appropriate addresses. And then, of course, the rest of the code is the same, and now JIT is only disabled for that specific memory range. Okay, so it's fairly simple. Using this design, we've built a number of plugins. There's the API tracer, which looks at how the sample interacts with the rest of the system. There is the native and Dalvik instruction tracers, where you get a whole long trace of you know, what it's doing. And then there's a taint tracker. And taint tracker, in this case, does taint tracking only on the ARM instructions or on the x86 instructions. We do not do taint tracking at per Dalvik. But what we've found is that despite the fact that we only do it in ARM, it's actually sufficient because we rebuild both views to actually see the taint propagate through Java objects and everything else. Okay, now we're just going to move on to the evaluation. In terms of evaluation, we have performance and usage. Quick note, basically this says that we use the Gingerbread build, okay, of the Android SDK. And remember, there's no changes to the source. For performance, we took 7 benchmark apps, which were all free. We downloaded them, installed it into the virtual machine. And then we ran the 6 different tests. One of them with a baseline, which is there's no change, no there's no change in the code base to QEMU at all. And then we have a no JIT baseline. This is the only time when we actually changed the Gingerbread source so that we disable JIT at build time to kind of get a comparison and see whether or not our selective, the disabling JIT actually works out. And then there's the different tools that we have. So if you look at the performance evaluation, the first thing to notice is that the results are not perfect. Now, what you see in the graph is each bar is actually one of the tests, except the baseline. So all of these bars are actually relative to the baseline in terms of the performance. And some of them are actually higher than the baseline. Now, it's kind of strange because if you look at the error bars, they're actually within 1% of the baseline. So it's very, very small. But then when you compare the multiple ones, they're actually very different. So what I would say is that if there's about a 10% difference, you know, between the bars, there's probably not too significant. But despite this, if you look at the top two, which is the API tracer, what we see is that by selectively disabling JIT, okay, for the API tracer, you actually have better performance than if you disable JIT completely. And this is because we only disable JIT for that particular classes.dex section of memory. Right, the rest of the system still is able to benefit from the JIT performance. The other kind of interesting thing here is this caffeine mark, which is the second to last. The bar that you don't see, which is the second one, is actually very small. And the reason for that, in terms of performance, is because one of the things that we do for Dalvik, which is actually a little bit different, is we retrieve the symbols dynamically at runtime. And that is because we actually have some guarantees with the way that the Dalvik virtual machine works, that all the symbols must be present at runtime. And so we should actually retrieve it there, so if there's any newly loaded code and everything else, we have the freshest symbol information. And so that's just a case where we need to get too many symbols, and so the performance is actually pretty bad in there. But if you just rely on a statically built symbol database, then the performance was expected to be a lot better. In terms of usage evaluation, we use the DroidScope and the plugins to analyze two malware. The basic idea is we start with a very high-level view, which is the API tracer, and then we start to look down based on our information on what it's doing. So we're essentially focusing on exactly what it's doing. In terms of the taint tracker, which is what we'll present, what we did was we took the IMEI, IMSI, the API calls, And when they return, we taint that specific object, which is a string. Okay. We also analyze the root exploits that comes with the malware. So Droid Kung Fu, this is actually very well known. The thing that I would point out is that of the three execution methods, the first one is the one that's default. In other words, based on our gingerbread build and the answers from its version 221 and get permission, that is the default path, okay, execution path. So what we did was we actually instrumented, in other words, once again, changed the return value of these two specific Dalvik methods so that it executes in the other two paths. So then we can see the possible malicious behavior in all three paths. In terms of the taint propagation, what we see here, the important thing is that the taint propagation, like we said, while we actually propagate taint at the ARM instruction level, we can actually see the taint propagated through the Java objects. So you can see that it begins at a string object, into another string object, and finally into a byte array, which is then written out into the network using syswrites. Okay. Droid Dream is also very similar. Now, the interesting thing about Droid Dream is that there are two processes that get started. There's the normal process, and the first thing that it does is it actually calls logcat minus C, which clears logcat. Okay, so here's just a quick example of how malware might actually go and interfere with the built-in analysis tools. And then there's the second process that's malicious. The interesting thing here is it does some kind of encryption before it sends it out into the network. And once again, in order for us to get Droid Dream to exhibit the malicious behavior, we have to instrument, again, in this case, system calls. Okay. So here's the similar graph. The byte, the crypt, the little gray oval there is what we added in. And to see kind of how this interleaving between taint propagation at the ARM instruction level and how the Dalvik instruction are actually being executed, here is just a quick view of a trace. So what you see is anything with the little square brackets around it are Dalvik instructions. Okay, and then the little indented annotations are the little information, little log messages about how the taint is being obtained and then how is it actually being written back into memory. The other thing you see over there is that there's this key value thing on the right-hand side, and that is part of that symbol retrieval, okay, because key value is actually pointed to by a field, so if you actually run through the object itself, you can find the actual string, which is key value. So in summary, DroidScope, we have a new dynamic binary instrumentation tool for Android. Right? And this kind of borrows from all of these previous tools and kind of combine everything into one. And we have this new kind of a rebuild, basically, but the both semantic views. And we have some support. We have support for instrumentation. We have some plugins. And we also have only partial JIT support right now because of that the challenge that we're talking about, and so we'll talk about that. So here's just a list of related works. If you actually Google every single one of these names, you get the original papers, okay, and even some of the source. So challenges that we've seen so far is, once again, JIT. So how do we get full JIT support? All right, one of the things is maybe we actually go in and start to try and unwrap how the JIT code actually works. In other words, how the compiler works. And then maybe we can actually build a reverse mapping and allow the JIT code to execute. So then, as it's executing, maybe we can still be able to identify which instructions or which basic blocks are actually being executed at the current time. Flushing the JIT cache is also kind of difficult because, like we said, while we can flush the full JIT cache, it would be better in terms of performance, okay, to be able to flush a particular, let's say, translated block or translated trace, very similar to how we do it in QEMU. Emulation detection is actually a big problem that we all face in terms of emulation-based analysis. There are previous work in the desktop space which addresses that. So what we would like to do is we just want to kind of bring up this a difference in terms of problem space, which is sensors. Right? There's a lot of sensors on these mobile devices that are not in desktop. So and all these sensors, there is a certain kind of inputs, right, that you can expect that would be very difficult to emulate. Especially when you consider that these sensors will have different pieces of hardware, which is, once again, very different. Bouncer is the Google version of a dynamic analysis, which uses QEMU. And so that's kind of interesting for us. The other thing is timing assumptions. In other words, the mobile phone is a real-time OS, okay? So that's important to consider. Closed-source systems, we actually think is actually easier as long as the companies, like Microsoft, or Apple is actually doing the same kind of implementation of these techniques, then they will be able to do a lot easier than us, where we have to reverse engineer it. And so that will conclude the talk, and I'll leave it for questions. But I know there's a, you know, should have a first question, which is if you want, where do you get DroidScope? So our plan is to release it, but right now the code base is kind of messy. So in other words, I need to clean it up. But once I clean it up, it will be released. And in the meantime, if you're actually interested, if you send us an email, I'm sure we can work something out. And if you're not, you know, kind of averse to looking at messy code, you know, it should work out. Okay.
Yeah. Jae-Yeon Jung, Microsoft Research. Great work. I'm wondering whether you've seen any sort of information flow that TainDroid missed that your DroidScope caught, because, you know, although we thought that we did a, you know, great job, you know, catching all this, you know, modeling all this JNI and stuff, you know, we're curious whether there was anything that instruction level instrumentation was able to help.
No. So the answer is no, we have not. And part of the reason is because we have not extensively applied, you know, and made this automated in terms of the taint analysis, okay, and the information flow analysis on this, you know, like the IMEI and all this information. So we actually have not done that automatically. So we have not been able to, you know, run this test on a large corpus of possible applications. So we have not seen that. And that's pretty much the reason why, is because we haven't done it automatically.
Okay. So I was wondering if you've seen if there's changes to Ice Cream Sandwich or Jelly Bean that it's going to change how your analysis works, because I know there's a lot of code structures, particularly inside of Dalvik, that might make your approach very fragile.
Yeah. So in terms of the way that it would be fragile, okay, as from my experience so far, is if they, for example, added a new way of checking whether or not the JITTY code exists, right? Because that's how we disable JIT. But from what we've seen, looking at the Ice Cream Sandwich source, I haven't seen that. I mean, maybe I haven't actually looked at the full source. So there might be other changes. And so one of the decisions that we made in the beginning, you know, and one of the reasons why we have that memory map, the shadow memory map, is to be able to support that. Because while we know that the locations in terms of memory would move around, we are actually not aware of any changes to the design overall, which violates our assumptions. Because our assumptions for the design is on MTurp, the way that works. Okay, and of course, the way the JIT works. So if there's changes in those two core parts, then yes, we will have to revise this to be able to address that.
Ben Lefschetz, Microsoft Research. So let me ask a question slightly differently, which is, if you had a chance to ask for special hooks or support from the Dalvik team, what would it be? What kind of request would you make?
I think the best one would be to be able to integrate that JIT support. Okay, and I think that's the most important thing. Because so far, as far as I know, the way that the Dalvik is built and is designed is actually very amendable for this kind of work, right? The only thing that is not is that JIT, because it's trace-based, right? If it wasn't trace-based, like if it's QMU, where it's actually basic block-based, then we would not have as many problems.
This is Kartik Bhargavan from India. So I was particularly curious to see the example with crypto in it towards the end, the malware that was using encrypted information that you were doing taint analysis on. And we're finding that increasing numbers of Android apps, especially commercial ones which wants to tout their security, are using crypto, not just malware, but actually good apps are as well. I was wondering if using a lot of crypto would actually spoil the way you're monitoring the data, because it masks it. Or do you think you'll be able to do all your stuff?
Yeah, I think in terms of crypto, right? We've actually ran taint analysis, okay, through crypto libraries, and it turns out that crypto libraries are actually for taint analysis is not a problem, because they're actually very good with cleaning up after themselves. Because normally taint analysis has a problem of taint explosion, which is you have too much taint being left around. With crypto, that's not a problem because they're actually very good with cleaning up. Okay, so they actually remove a lot of the overtainting problems and remnants. Okay, so that's actually, it's better in terms of for this kind of analysis.
Indeed, so because signatures and verification are often used to endorse and remove taints from data is usually quite an important aspect of crypto. I was wondering if you're able to track, say, cryptographically masked flows through through these kinds of applications.
If we have the crypto library, yeah, we should be able to do that. That's not a limitation.
Okay.
Let's thank the speaker.